So continuing reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 21st chapter, text number 21. There are two verses that came before, but we will just recite the Sanskrit for this one, and then I'll read those before I speak. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. From King Hasti came three sons, named Ajamidha, Dwimidha, and Purumidha. The descendants of Ajamidha, headed by Priyamedha, all achieve the position of Brahmanas. This verse gives evidence confirming the statement of Bhagavad Gita that the orders of society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, are calculated in terms of qualities and activities. Guna karma vibhagashaha. All the descendants of Ajamidha, who was a Kshatriya, became Brahmanas. This was certainly because of their qualities and activities. Similarly, sometimes sons of Brahmanas or Kshatriyas become Vaishyas. Brahmana Vaishyatam Gataha. When a Kshatriya or Brahmana adopts the occupation or duty of a Vaishya, Krishigo Raksha Vani Jam, he is certainly counted as a Vaishya. On the other hand, if one is born a Vaishya, by his activities he can become a Brahmana. This is confirmed by Narad Muni, Yasya Lal Yal Lakshanam Proktam. The members of the Varnas or social orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, must be ascertained by their symptoms, not by birth. Birth is immaterial, but quality is essential. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadatisho Padantikam Vancha kalpa turu bhyascha, kripa sindhu bhya evacha, patitanam pavane bhyo, vaishnave bhyo, namo nama. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasadi, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll read the two previous verses and read back this verse and then give some thoughts on that. From Garga came a son named Shini, and his son was Gargya. Although Gargya was a Kshatriya, there came from him a generation of Brahmanas. From Mahavirya came a son named Duritakshaya, whose sons were Trayaruni, Kavi, and Pushkararuni. Although these sons of Duritakshaya Takshaya took birth in a dynasty of Kshatriyas, they too attained the position of Brahmanas. Brihat Kshatra had a son named Hasti who established the city of Hastinapur, now New Delhi. And today's verse, from King Hasti came three sons named Ajamidha, Dwimidha, and Purumidha. The descendants of Ajamidha, headed by Priyamedha, all achieved the position of Brahmanas. This chapter is entitled The Dynasty of Bharat. And the first thing that we saw is one of the most prominent persons that appeared, who we were speaking about recently in previous classes, was Rantidev. And his qualities were very exceptional, very inspirational for us to meditate upon, that he exemplified a perfect Vaishnava. His Holiness Jananda Maharaj, when he was speaking, Wednesday, he mentioned that devatas, they ask Vishnu, who is his best devotee? And without any hesitation, Lord Vishnu replied, Rantidev. And then he also gave some history. But if you look at his qualities, Rantidev, he had the vision of a Vaishnava, in that he would not just see the spirit soul within the body, but he also saw that the Lord resided within each and every living entity. His vision was completely transcendental. Even Lord Vishnu, he hints at this when speaking to Durvasa Muni, that Durvasa Muni had offended Ambarish. And finally, Durvasa Muni realized that somehow, let me take shelter of Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu chastised them. He said, you are Brahmana, and you're supposed to be Samadarshi, seeing the equality of everyone. And Durvasa questioned, but I understand that all the living entities are spirit souls. And Lord Vishnu, he got very angry. He said, you see that, but that is not Samadarshi. Samadarshi means to be like Ambarish Maharaj. That he doesn't only see the spirit soul, but he sees the super soul within everyone. So Rantidev, he exhibited that vision to see the soul, but also see the spirit soul within each and every living entity. He also demonstrated the attitude of a Vaishnava, in that seeing the Lord and the soul within everyone, he saw himself in relation to that as the servant of all. And we saw that different categories of people came to beg of him his practically his only meal. He had been fasting for 48 days. And without any hesitation, Rantidev, he was prepared to give everything he had to these people, whether they be a Brahmana or even the dogs of a Chandal. He was willing to give of himself, to sacrifice himself for the benefit of others. And this had a tremendous effect on those who were intimately connected with him. That those who were intimately connected with him, they became under his influence, and they too became Vaishnavas. They too became Vaishnavas. And in today's verse, today's section of verses, a very interesting point is coming up. Oftentimes, we hear about the glorious position of the Brahmanas. And we see that sometimes contrast in modern society. It's labeled incorrectly as the caste system. I don't know what the situation is so much here, but in Trinidad, where I'm from, that is a big problem. In the sense that there's this conviction amongst ordinary Hindu society that if I have a certain name, then I'm entitled to a certain position. In Trinidad, there's one title as Maharaj. Like, you know, a person's last name, family name, somehow becomes Maharaj. I've never heard that anywhere besides Trinidad. And normally we respect our sannyasis as, you know, such Prabhunananda Saraswati Maharaj, Chandramali Maharaj, and so on. But this person's name is such and such Maharaj. And it's supposed to be a Brahmin title. And oftentimes, when you speak to them, they feel very comfortable in their position. That, you know, I'm a Brahmin. I was born in a Brahmin family, despite what the activities may be. And oftentimes, it creates a lot of problems because there are a number of people whose last name doesn't correspond to what they think is a Brahmin title, and they take to the service of becoming priests in Trinidad. And oftentimes you hear them speak, this priest will criticize that one and say, no, no, he's not so good, he's a chamar. Or he's a, you know, he doesn't come from a good family. But somehow he's doing the function of a priest. And I knew one of them who was actually a very nice person. Like very humble, very, you know, down to earth. You could approach him as a young boy growing up. And he was one of the most criticized. Like if one of the higher up pundits or priests found out that you called him to your house to do a puja, then you would get criticized for associating with him. But he was such a nice guy. You know, he was very humble, he was very down to earth. He exhibited, you know, care for the persons who, he's not a devotee, you know, a Vaishnava, but he exhibited care for those under him. But still he was criticized by regular Brahminical society. There's a very interesting story in that the first people who became Vaishnavas or seriously practicing Vaishnavas pushing on Srila Prabhupada's movement in Trinidad weren't Indians. They were, you know, like African, Afro-Trinidadians, to be politically correct. Or as we would say, just, you know, like black guys liming on the block, just hanging out. somehow they became interested and pushed on this movement. And his one very good friend of mine, a disciple of His Holiness Satvarup Maharaj, when he was initiated, he received the name Anga Maharaj Das. And he lived in the temple for many years, and one of the main services he would perform was distributing books. And he was distributing books in one part of Trinidad that's heavily Indian population. Now, when I say Indian, like normally in England, when you say Indian, that's a different meaning. You know, normally it means Gujaratis, maybe a few Bengalis scattered here and there, but mainly Gujaratis, and they all speak their language. But in Trinidad, it isn't like that. Like, hardly anybody in Trinidad speaks Hindi. Maybe some older people know a few words, but none of us grew up speaking that. We speak English, and not very good English at that. And so he was distributing books in one, you know, Indian populated part of Trinidad. And he went up to this one guy, and, you know, he tried to, you know, preach to him a little, distribute a book. And the guy was surprised to see a black guy in dhoti, kurta, tilak, you know, wearing a chadar, coming up to him and trying to sell him an Indian book, you know, Bhagavad Gita, something like that. So he asked him, "What's your name?" And he said, "My name is Anga Maharaj Das." And the guy, he got really angry. He picked up a stick in his yard, and he said, "It was Indian guy." And he said, "I'm born an Indian, and I didn't get the title Maharaj. How can a black so-and-so like you be called Maharaj?" And he chased him down the road. He had to run away. True story. True story. And so this goes on, that people think that just by having a name, it entitles me to something. But that isn't the primary consideration. The primary consideration that Srila Prabhupada is pointing out here, as is not only mentioned by our acharyas, but in the Bhagavatam itself and other histories, that the primary consideration is the qualities that a person naturally has. Not only the qualities that a person naturally has, but the qualities that a person can develop by contact with superior personalities and a superior process. This is the essential characteristic. Not one's birth. In one place, Srila Prabhupada says that one's birth is secondary consideration. Because in previous times, the way marriages used to take place was very scientifically done. We see it demonstrated in the Mahabharata, that great care was taken that a proper match would be made. Horoscopes would be checked. So naturally, persons of like tendencies would be combined together in marriage. So there's a greater chance that the offspring of that combination would naturally possess the qualities of the both parents. But in today's society, that isn't the case. You know, anybody is marrying anybody. You know, and more, we see marriages are breaking up. And interestingly enough, like in Trinidad, most of the people that I know who were, you know, products of an arranged marriage, they never separated. Never separated. But a lot of people, like friends who I went to school with, so many of them are divorced just based on attraction. You know, whether it be sexual, whether it be, you know, physical, somebody looks nice, whether it be they get married for money or for social status, whatever it may be. So many of those marriages are broken up. In fact, I have one friend, he got divorced, and the person he's now married to, she was also divorced. And they remarried. If that would last, I don't know. But we see that the primary consideration that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here is that a person, if he demonstrates particular qualities, though he may be born in a family that may be labeled as lesser, he's to be respected and appreciated for those qualities he possesses. And by extension, not only the qualities he possesses, but the work that he does. And therefore, it is a fact that there's fluidity, there's freedom of movement within the varnas. And that is historically documented as described here. Many of these persons being described, these generations, descendants of Bharat, they were born in very powerful Kshatriya families. These persons we are speaking about here are not ordinary Kshatriyas, just some maybe running one village or something like that. These people are the most prominent Kshatriyas on the face of the planet. So much so that they are mentioned in Bhagavatam, which is the most authoritative history, the most authoritative Shastra that reconciles everything within the Vedic literature. So to be mentioned in Bhagavatam, you have to be very special. So these Kshatriyas that are being mentioned here are not ordinary people. They are to be understood that they are the topmost of Kshatriyas. And yet their children decide, this isn't for me. I want to be a Brahmin. I want to be a Brahmin. And by their qualities, they were accepted as such. You know, to think that someone can be a Brahmin just by the name he bears or by his lineage is as rational as thinking that just because my father was a doctor, I'm also a doctor. I didn't qualify myself. I wasn't educated in the right way. But still, I'm a doctor. And, you know, I was giving the example of Brahmins in Trinidad. Most of the people who I know with Brahminical names, they do all nonsense. They do all nonsense. Even people who I used to associate with in regular temples. Like one of the regular things that they would do, as you know, it's not uncommon, you know, to go and knock back a few at the pub or to go to clubs, associate loosely with women. It's a normal thing. Normal thing. There was some people I know who run a temple, very highly placed family in one adjacent village to where I live. And for Christmas, they have a Christmas get-together, but they don't have it in the temple. It's for the members of the temple, but they don't have it in the temple. They have it at their home because they want to have some alcohol, some, you know, whatever. They want to eat some meat, do things like that. But it's all temple people. You know, very highly placed. The guy, even the head of that family, he likes the idea that the ordinary people in the temple respect him quite a lot. But his activities are not that of a Brahmin. Not that of a Brahmin. And there's histories besides this that illustrate the movement of a person who was not born in a Brahmin family, but, you know, became attracted by that way of life. And sometimes it may not be for the right reasons. Because the Brahmins generally are seen, even though the Kshatriyas are there and have great prowess, the Brahmanas are actually the controllers of society. They have the most power. And there's a very interesting history of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra, he was born a Kshatriya. And somehow he had some association with Vashishta, and he saw that Vashishta had a wish-fulfilling cow, Kamdhenu cow, and he desired to get that. So he tried to usurp that cow to kidnap it. But that cow, by its prowess, created a vast army and defeated Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra, he went again, and he was defeated by Vashishta. And he thought to himself, well, his Brahma Tejas is more prominent or more powerful than my Kshatra Bal, that my Kshatriya strength. And he thought, well, I should be a Brahmin. And he started to perform austerities, you know, change his lifestyle, maybe studied Shastra, really changed his outlook. And he developed some qualities. There was one guy, his name was Trishanku, and he had a very interesting desire. He desired, I want to go to Indraloka, but I don't want to apply for a visa. So he went to Vashishta and asked Vashishta, you know, could you get me in the back door? You know, in so one country we visit is Guyana. It's not too far from Trinidad. And next to Guyana is one country called Suriname. So if Trinidadians or anybody visit Guyana and you want to go to Suriname, then the devotees who assist you in going to Suriname, the first thing they ask you is, do you want to go like normal people or do you want to go backtrack? Do you want to go in the back door? And there's a way, like up near to one of our temples, one river called the Quarantine River, you could just catch a boat, cross the river, and you're in Suriname. And they take you to one place, and there's buses. Because everybody, it's so normal that there's, you know, buses waiting, taxis, everything waiting to take you into the city. You know, it's expected that you come through the back door. And so much so that the government realized that. And I think in recent time, they set up a proper post there. So you don't have to take the official transport to get across. So this Trishanku, he went to Vashishta and he wanted, you know, I want to get in, but I don't want to get the visa. And Vashishta said, that isn't the process. There's certain rules and regulations we have to follow. I'm not going to do it. So he went to some of Vashishta's disciples and he asked them. And they said, if our guru said no, how can we say yes? I know. And then he found Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra, he wanted to test out the strength he had received as a brahmana. And he tried to, by his meditation, by his power that he acquired, he was actually getting Trishanku in through the back door. But the thing is, like sometimes in these countries, you know, like always, you get caught. I know many people. There's one funny story. There was a guy in Trinidad, visited the temple, nice guy. And he was going to Canada. And one of my friends, when he was going to Canada, my godbrothers, he saw him at the airport. And when he got back to Trinidad, he saw him again, like right away, because they come from the same village. So when he asked him what happened, like immigration kicked him out. He didn't get to enter the country. And even though he had visa and whatnot, like somehow he looked a bit, you know, as they say in England, a bit dodgy. And they sent him back. And there's a lot of people, like, you don't get through. So Trishanku was one of those guys. Like when Indra's immigration people found out there was an unauthorized entry, an attempt to breach the border, then they kicked him out. And as far as I recall, like he's just lost in limbo somewhere in between here and there. You know, and I don't know what they call it. Many years ago, there's a movie called The Terminal with Tom Hanks. And he was, you know, caught up in the International Departure Lounge. He wasn't in America, but he wasn't anywhere else. He was just in the, and he couldn't come out, but he couldn't go back to his country because his country was overthrown by a coup, so it wasn't recognized by the government. So Trishanku, he was just there. But Vishwamitra, he lost a lot of power by doing that. But he didn't give up. He tried again. And, you know, he tried more. And then there was the incident with, Menaka? He was meditating and he became attracted by Menaka. And he had one he enjoyed with her. And he realized that, you know, this isn't working out. And ultimately, when he finally gets himself to the point where he develops enough brahminical strength, he realizes that all this work I've been doing, it actually wasn't really worth it. And Vishwamitra's endeavors culminate, just as Srila Prabhupada mentions many times, that to be a brahmana, even though we often hear that Krishna, Vishnu, is most affectionately disposed toward the brahmanas, more so is he towards those who are surrendered to him, his devotees. And this comes out time and time again. So Vishwamitra, when he finally achieved what he set out to do, he realized that all this I was doing to become a brahmana, to develop that strength, it wasn't really the fruit. The fruit is actually that I become a devotee of God. And at that time, Lord Ramchandra was on the planet. And it's very interesting. I was hearing in one series of lectures, I think they were right here from the Mana, Gauranga was saying, that the first Kanda, the first book of the Ramayana is the Bal Kanda. Bal means child. But if we look at the Ramayana, Dasharatha didn't have any children. He performed the yajna with the assistance of Vashishta and others. The yajna was fruitful. Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna were born. And then few verses, and then Dasharatha is thinking, now they're of age, I should get them married. There's no childhood pastimes of Lord Ram really described in the Ramayana. And yet, The title of that book is called Balkand. So Acharyas, they comment that who is the child? Who is the Bal? You know, where is the Bal Leela that takes place in the Balkand? And they give advice that the child actually is Vishwamitra. And Balkand of the Ramayana actually begins at that point when Vishwamitra comes and requests that Dasharath allow him to take care of Ram and Lakshman. And the whole idea, as you go through the different incidents that take place in the Balkand, is that Vishwamitra, all the prowess that he has achieved in his endeavor to become a Brahmin, to become a powerful yogi, a muni, he's giving it all back as an offering to the lotus feet of Ram. And therefore, the Bal means, or Balkand means, that the devotee, he takes shelter of the Supreme Lord just as a child would take shelter of its parents. But ultimately, in the six symptoms of surrender, the most prominent one is to see the Lord as one's maintainer. I have no other shelter other than the Lord. He's my only shelter. He's my maintainer. And in the same way, a child takes shelter of its parents. The child doesn't know anything else. The devotee takes shelter of the Lord. And so, even though, as it is described here, one may be born in a family that's not recognized as being very highly placed, by his endeavors and through the association of others, one can develop those qualities like a Brahmana. And ultimately, those qualities, those Brahminical qualities, culminate in one taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. And this is demonstrated, I think there isn't anywhere that demonstrate this more clearly than this movement that Srila Prabhupada had created. Now, Srila Prabhupada, you know, just recently we celebrated Srila Prabhupada's departure from Calcutta to the West. And he tried for so many years. Srila Prabhupada labored and endeavored and tried to make devotees in India and wouldn't do it. Harishauri Prabhu, he was giving a series of discourses and he was waiting for the opportunity to ask Srila Prabhupada about his, you know, previous work in India. And there's this one time when Srila Prabhupada, Shishi Yara Gokulananda Ji Ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki, Shishi Gaunitaya Ji Ki, he had established a League of Devotees. And there were some one or two books or publications that Srila Prabhupada made, and they were under the impression published by the League of Devotees. And there were a few students in that place that, you know, were attracted to Srila Prabhupada. They would sometimes assist him. I think at that place he made one disciple. And so Harishauri was asking him, "Never, Srila Prabhupada, who were the League of Devotees?" And Srila Prabhupada didn't take him very seriously. Because sometimes Srila Prabhupada, he would go on Harinam, he would want to do Padayatra, and he would try to encourage the boys who were staying in that place to accompany him. And Srila Prabhupada would, you know, do Padayatra, chanting from that place to the next, then turn around and walk back the way he came. So Harishauri, he was interested, you know, like, Srila Prabhupada, who were the League of Devotees? And Srila Prabhupada spoke sometimes in general, you know, that was that place, I was there and I was trying to do some preaching and I established this hoping that it would catch root. And, you know, he let it slide. Then sometimes the topic would come up again and Harishauri would insist, "But Srila Prabhupada, who are the League of Devotees?" And then Srila Prabhupada replied, "Oh, the League of Devotees, that was me." That was me. And Srila Prabhupada, he labored so hard in India. And it culminated in that point when he came to the West. And we're hearing in the bhajan that Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj was singing, that Srila Prabhupada composed, you know, Markine Bhagavad Dharma, that, you know, this place is such a sinful place. Will anybody really understand what I'm saying? And there were barriers, definitely, the person's understanding Srila Prabhupada. I know people like who've been listening to Srila Prabhupada for 20, 30 years and still can't understand clearly what he's saying. He's heavily accented. And Srila Prabhupada came to the West. And it's interesting. If you read Srila Prabhupada, some of Prabhupada's, I think the introduction to his original Srimad Bhagavatam, I heard this once in a class by Ravindra Swarup, Srila Prabhupada's impression of Bhagavatam, that the lower classes of society won't be able to understand this, nor will they be able to take to this process. And Srila Prabhupada's genuine expectation was that when he came to the West, that the intellectual class of society would appreciate. When he came to the West, he found that was far from the truth. That the persons who became attracted and seriously committed to his mission were the persons, by those standards of that day and time, were those persons who were apparently rejects from society, what is called the counterculture, just rebelling against everything. You know, the whole motto at that time was it don't trust anybody over 30 or don't trust anybody over 40 or something like that. And they all gave up all the values and the norms that were ascribed to them by their parents, by society, and they gave it all up. And they came to Srila Prabhupada. And coming back to the first point, Srila Prabhupada himself exhibited those qualities that Rantidev himself exhibited. His vision was completely universal. That they have come, they show some interest in Krishna, I'll take care of them. And Srila Prabhupada, with his own hands, he would serve them. He would cook, he would serve all of them very menially. He would cook, do all the prep, cook. You know, cook for 25, 30 people, and then the crowds grew. And, you know, one of the things I hate doing, not hate, but it's not the thing I like doing, is rolling chapatis. It's really tedious. And Srila Prabhupada, he would roll so many chapatis, and he would recall later on some of his earlier disciples that such and such, he would eat 10, 12 chapatis. And I would say, do you want more? And he would reply, yes, yes. I can't remember who he was speaking about. And Srila Prabhupada would continue serving them. Until one person I was listening, he realized that he was attending the programs at lunchtime. You know, prasadam, just like it is now, is always the big hit in any Hare Krishna function. That he was going, and he was being fed very nicely, and everybody else would go, and then he would realize that all the plates, everything would just remain there, all the pots, everything would remain there that had the prasadam. And he realized one day, it was just me and Srila Prabhupada there. You know, Swamiji. And he went up to Srila Prabhupada and he asked, but Swamiji, do you need help to wash these pots? And Srila Prabhupada just smiled, beamed one smile back at him. And he said, yes, yes, of course. I was praying to Krishna to send somebody to help me wash these pots. And Srila Prabhupada, he wouldn't think anything of it. He gave of himself, and we see the effect that it had. That persons who would be completely rejected, no question of them being Brahmana, no question of them even being any of the Varanas. You know, Chandal and less than Chandal at their lifestyle. And Srila Prabhupada, by his influence, you know, as Sanatana Goswami says, and Srila Prabhupada quoted very fondly in the Nectar of Devotion series, that just as bell metal, when combined with mercury, under the right circumstances, can be transformed into gold, then similarly, persons, dvijatvam, by proper initiation into the Vaishnava achar, can become purified. And not only become Brahmanas, but go beyond Brahmanas. And not only go beyond Brahmanas, but like a domino effect, convert others into Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. So this notion that it's a mold that everybody gets fit into according to his birth is a false one. That's one of the reasons why India as a society is maybe not as progressive as it can be, because of that rigidity in holding on to something that isn't supported by the Shastra. So, those are my thoughts on that. Any discussion? Anybody has any question, any comments?